Welcome to Brothers King Media, the podcast where we talk about music, books, maybe someday movies, and whatever else pops into our head. My name is Samuel.
My name is Solly.
And we're back for our second week of podcasting. And also, David Crowder, our second trek into the David Crowder Band discography. So the album we're doing today is their first official album as David Crowder Band.
Released in March of 2002 by Six Step Records.
Released by Six Step Records, which as we said last week, they were one of Six Step's records, like, premier bands. Like, I think Crowder is still on Six Step Records.
Right.
And him and Tomlin are the only reason they still have a record label.
Right. Mainly Crowder.
I mean, he's the superstar right now.
Right.
For whatever reason, I mean.
Thank you, Chris Tomlin, for whatever you've done.
Writing some modern hymns.
Yeah.
So.
Praise your God. The reason why you're still an artist. We love you.
So with this album, the Crowder Band, David Crowder Band, officially got its roster that would maintain for a few albums at least, and really they really only changed one member later. So, sorry.
Right.
Okay, so anyway, we got Jack Parker and David Crowder, we already talked about last week, and we also talked about Mike Hogan,
right.
Violin, guitar, acoustic guitar.
Well, in this one, his job description is violin and noise.
Violin, noises, and vinyl.
That sounds cool. I wish I could just, you know, work a job where all I have to do is make noise. Even though I probably couldn't make my noise sound as good as his. Anyway,
we'll talk about later in this album, but really this album, they their experimental side showed ever so faintly. So we talked about them three last week. So this week, this album, they added a few new members. So the first new member they added was Jason Solly. He was their electric guitarist, so their new second guitarist. And how do you feel he contributed to their sound?
Let's see. I mean, Jack obviously is making all the cool sounds with his guitar. Jason put the rhythm in.
Well, yeah, he's a rhythm guitarist. I personally don't feel like he added too much to the band.
He didn't. I feel like he helped keep the consistency.
He may have, I don't know if he's to blame or just the fact that they got signed to a Worship record label, but they definitely were going less indie this album, more pop.
Right.
And I don't know if maybe he had something to do with that. Well, if he was maybe more the pop guitarist, whereas Jack was, you know, indie and then later very hair metal.
Right. Yes. Like, you know, his very recent, but disbanded band Lambs of the Abyss.
No, they are still a band.
Oh, they're still a band. M-C-3PO?
We'll talk about them later. But
cool.
Yes,
well,
Lambs of the Abyss.
That's a prelude to the Lambs of the Abyss.
They are a real band still.
They are still a band.
So I don't know how much Jason Solly really added to their sound. He may have been responsible for some of their more pop leanings in this album. Because, well, he did, like you said, keep things more consistent and added more rhythm.
Well, I feel like in this album that all of their different styles created this. And I feel like Jason Solly brought in a lot of an edgy sound to their pop rock.
The pop rock.
Well, what I'd say it's a modern worship blend
of alternative rock,
edge, and pop rock. Like that's what I would say it is.
The best description, if I had to describe David Crowder Band to someone, I would say like Dave Matthews Band and Jimmy Eat World playing worship music.
Yes, or if we were going to compare them to Christian artists like. Of that time, I would say Deluge.
Okay, I can see that.
Maybe a little bit of Matt Redman in there.
Well, they did do a Matt Redman song in this album.
Did they?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was going to say, though, they definitely had more of an edge than Deluge, Matt Redman. really, if they were pulling from any worship artist, inspiration-wise, they was definitely pulling from Delirious.
Right.
Because Delirious, they, once again, he, Martin Smith, I believe his name is?
Yes.
He's the lead songwriter for Delirious. And,
he wrote Obsession, yeah. Which is on this album.
And they pulled a lot of influence from Delirious. And I feel like Delirious, because they've written so many modern worship songs, they don't get enough credit for being the experimental band they were. And they are a band who is retired. So maybe someday we'll get around to reviewing all their albums. Delirious.
Delirious, I'm sorry.
That will
I
be
meant a, Delirious. I said Delirious earlier.
Yes.
I meant Delirious.
Delirious will be a trip, though. Let
Delirious
me assure you.
Delirious is pretty good, but they're making worship. They're church worship. Like, they're very much Sunday morning.
Yes.
Which isn't bad. That's, you know, teach their own.
All right, so moving on. Next up to the lineup, we had Mike Dodson on bass, or Mike D.
Mikey D.
I love me some Mike D. He is not only a good bass player. If you've ever seen any videos of him playing piano, he is an amazing classical pianist.
Right. He was trained classically, which, since we're speaking of them and their roles as musicians in the band, I don't think it's too early to say that we have Mike D to thank a lot for the bass parts, later on in church music, the piano parts. He does a lot of the cello. He works with a lot of different synths. He does. He is actually very key to the sound of the David Crowder Band.
Well, truly, all the members eventually go multi-instrumentalist.
Right.
Like,
now,
by the time they get to A Collision, I don't think any one of them played one instrument.
As they play live, yes, that's true. As they play live, each of them played anywhere between 2 to 17 different instruments at the same time. But Mike D, I'm talking specifically in the recording.
Yeah.
He's responsible for several of the factors, the instrumental factors, which that's more of what I like. Sam's more of a lyrical guy, and I'm more of an instrumental. I like that kind of thing, which he loves music, but he's more with the, oh, wow, this lyric is deep. Lyrics are okay, but if the music was just the music without the lyrics, it'd still be.
When we get into some of their later albums, I will point out some of my favorite lyric lines. Like,
right.
I love this line.
Right.
And then I will give you the weird reason why.
I can already think of one that I really want to say, but I can't.
We'll save it for later.
We have to save it, but oh man, it irks me. It doesn't irk me. It
moves you?
It moves me. Yeah, irking is a different thing than moving.
Yeah, irking means like
irking means
you're annoyed.
I want to kill myself.
Well, that's a bit harsh.
Nah.
All right, and then last but not least, the sixth member, we have Jeremy Bush, a.k.a. The B-Wack. He is amazing. And I forgot, I can't fail to mention, yes, he's the drummer. He plays the drums and a lot of their loops, electronics. And beyond that, I would be a remiss if I didn't mention these six guys, particularly the B-Wack and Mike D, are very intelligent people.
Yes. They both received doctorate degrees in, like, engineering.
Did they really just receive doctorates?
Doctorates.
Man, I didn't realize that.
As they were kids, Mike D joined the band at 18 years old.
Did he?
And he already had his, like, bachelor's.
Did,
something.
For sure?
Yes. Like, yes. I read this somewhere. I cannot tell you for sure where. I will look it up later. But I remember reading about this. I don't know if the information is true. I obviously did not obtain it from them.
I do know I was watching an interview with them. And he was saying, Crowder was saying that Mike D was such a smart college student that they just started giving him like grants and just basically paying him to go to their college because he was so smart.
Yeah, they were paying him to go to their college, so he went to their college for money. That was his job.
Because he was just that smart.
Yeah.
So
that's probably why he's got so many degrees.
And as we get into some of their other albums, you will a lot of math crops up a lot.
Right. And David Crowder, he was also pretty smart.
Like, yeah, they're all
pretty smart.
Well, they're all, it's funny, they all went to a Bible college, but right. you would think they went to like...
Right, they all went to, Baylor University.
It wasn't Baylor.
It was Baylor. Yes, it was.
We'll fact check that for next week, just for the sake of time.
I know for a fact because it was on our website, but okay.
We'll double check that for next week.
We'll double check it, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
So... That brings us to the album. So this album is Can You Hear Us, their first official release on Six Steps Records.
As the band, David Crowder.
Yes, David Crowder Band. And I'm doing like the asterisk sign in the air right there for those that can't see me because all you can hear is
we'll
my voice.
We'll put that in the closed captioning.
David Crowder.
Hashtag.
No,
I mean,
asterisk band. There we go.
Yeah, he does the flash of the hand.
So... I will throw out there, David Crowder Band loves throwing themes in their albums, which is one of the reasons they're one of my favorite bands.
Right.
And one of the themes they throw in is the syllable count of their album titles.
Right.
So their first three albums, because they have a 6-album cycle.
Well, is that necessarily a theme, or is that like a hint?
Like, yeah, this
oh,
and that.
Oh, 7 is the theme. We'll say that this is the main theme.
Like, there's other themes in the album. But I'm saying, so, this album title has 4 syllables, and their first 3 albums all have 4 syllables in the title. So, for those that didn't know that, go through and just check out their album titles. You'd be like, whoa. Now, keep in mind, this isn't their indie albums. Only their 6 albums officially released on Six Step Records. So, and then there's... We'll get more into the what the 4s and the 3s and the 7s mean later,
right.
At least according to Crowder Band.
Right.
But and then this is just coming from the fan website. I don't know how much there is to this. So the album was released on 2/26/2002. 2 + 2 + 6 + 2 + 0 + 0 = 2 = 14. 14 is a multiple of 7. So, whew. So there you go. That's the fun facts about this album before we actually get into the album itself. So there's all kinds of stuff hidden in that. And Crowder has said in interviews before, he loves injecting meaning into anything he works on. Because the more meaning you can throw into stuff, the more people will pay attention to it and hopefully get the other meanings he's throwing in, you know.
Right. Of course, you know, the main theme of all of these, you know, is the number 7. They throw that in a whole lot, so much in throughout the
And we'll get to that in the third album.
We'll get to why, but I want to speak specifically of the theme of this album. According to David Crowder, the album has a couple themes. First, there's the fact that often we feel disconnected from God. Second, there's the breakthrough realization of the truth being that we are living in an absolute, constant, very presence of God, and that we realize that we can't help but find rescue. So that was his take on, obviously it wasn't his take, he is the creator of the album, but that was what he said that the theme was. So, how do you see that in the songs? Do you see his, you know, where we can find the rescue, or even like just filling the absence?
I feel like they hit the themes much better in later albums.
Right.
As far as themes go, I mean, yeah, in a general way, you could say, you know, these songs are all about Jesus. Jesus is our rescue.
Right.
You could say that. But for the most part, I feel like these are just more a whole bunch of songs that they either... there's like 3 covers in this album.
Right.
And then the rest I feel like are just songs that... Well, there's at least 3 other songs that were from the previous album.
Right.
All I can say.
Right.
So a lot of these were just stuff they've been sitting on. I feel like, and just said, okay, these all go relatively well together. They're all worship songs.
Yeah.
Let's just kind of get our feet wet here and see what we can do as a band.
Right. That's actually, yeah,
Descript?
Right, okay. That sounds like a good word to use.
Okay.
Throw that in there.
All right, so...
You're the one with college education.
I mean...
You went to college, at least. I work in a car dealership, so just go ahead.
All right. So let's go ahead. That's kind of a little background on the album. Oh, and before I get too much further, I will also mention the producer of this album. Make sure I'm saying this right. Brent Milligan, exactly. And from what we looked up on this album, he didn't do too much before this album. Is that what AllMusic is saying?
He did. Yeah, that is. Honestly, his record, and we're going to call it track record because this is where they keep track of what he's done. His track record actually starts in 2012. That's as far back as I can find.
So there's nothing on there before this?
I cannot find anything else before 2012.
That is weird. I do know right now he's a very prominent producer. He produces all kinds of stuff. He's produced Stephen Curtis Chapman. What else did you say? Torrin Wells?
He's produced for Torrin Wells. But looking at his record, actually it's a little bit before 2012. He produces, which it doesn't give us the year, but he produced the Worship for Your Family 35 Top Worship Songs. But that's the very first thing. But then right after that is he engineers and plays cello for Emmanuel LaLinda or whoever that is for Volver. But then the first year they give us is Stand Up 2012 P27 Band. But he composes for that. So anything after that is what he produces. So the very first thing he produces after 2012 is Season of Reflection, which maybe that's something of his because it doesn't give us an artist.
I don't know. That's weird. I mean, it does say right on the back of the album cover here that Brent Milligan produced it. So for better, unless there's two Brent Milligans out there and I just don't know about them,
right?
This is the only Brent Milligan I'm aware of.
Now, he was the bassist for Avalon.
Was he? So he played bass for Avalon for a while.
And he produced and composed for Zealand.
Okay.
Fun fact for all you VeggieTale lovers, he did produce O Holy Night, the movie, Journey of a Little Drummer Boy. Among many other things. Something else that's really cool is all of us know DC Talk and Jesus Freak. He played bass for it.
Okay. So he was a big studio musician, if nothing else.
Right, very big studio musician. Charlie Peacock.
I do know when I saw Stephen Curtis Chapman a couple years ago on tour, he was playing bass live for Stephen Curtis Chapman currently.
All right.
So
now, you know who Charlie Peacock is?
Yes, Charlie.
I have no idea.
Okay, so Charlie Peacock, we might just get into his stuff later. He discovered Switchfoot for your reference.
Okay, yes. Okay, I knew the name. But he played bass for Charlie Peacock.
Okay. Yeah, so, Charlie Peacock is a totally underrated artist, but
right, okay.
We'll get into him later. All right, so let's move on to his production style. As you guys probably noticed from the credits, he produces a lot of very modern-sounding stuff. And that extended back to 2002, where he honestly made this album sound very modern. It sounds... If this wasn't the David Crowder Band, it sounds like a worship album from 2002.
Right.
And just the way it sounds. It's very crisp, clean, a good chunk of distorted guitars.
Exactly, yeah.
Everything's very streamlined.
Yes.
And they even cover some popular worship songs of the time.
Right.
So, contrast that with who was the last week's the producer of All I Can Say.
Last week, I don't recall.
It was Vic something, I want to say.
Yeah, Vic something.
He actually produces Illuminate, so we'll get to him again later.
Okay, we'll
but you can definitely tell the difference in the sounds of the producer here.
Right.
Because Brent Milligan's production is so much cleaner and crisp. And for better or for worse, I will say, out of all of David Crowder Band's albums, production-wise, well, really, just overall, this isn't one of my favorites.
Right.
And part of that is because of the production. It's by no means a bad album. If this was an album by Sonic Flood, I'd be like, wow, that is really a step up.
Now, maybe, you know, that we can maybe consider the possibility that maybe the production's not so great because Milligan, this may have been one of Milligan's very first productions.
And I'm not saying, like, it's shoddy. Like, the production itself is good. It just sounds so much like 2002.
Yes.
There's nothing unique about it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of uniqueness about the album other than some of the lyrics. They do, at this point, still have some very moving lyrics.
Their lyrics are a step up from the album previous, I feel like. And the music, some of it is creative. Like I said, if this was any other band but David Crowder Band, I would say it's that band's better album.
Right.
And it shows how much of a fanboy I am, or just simply saying how good David Crowder Band is, that what would be other band's best album is their worst album.
Right.
So, let's go ahead and, now that we've talked about the album, the producer, the musicians, let's jump into some of our favorite songs or songs that stood out to us. And I will just start
We haven't quite... Now, there's a fun fact about one of the credits in there. Photography is by... the photography of that album is by a lady by the name Kristen Barlow, which is one of the Butler girls.
Are you positive?
Later on, yes.
You just fact-checked her? So, one of the Barlow girls.
She was the photography. This was before the Barlow girls existed. Which doesn't later on in one, I forget, it may have been church music. That
you're thinking of Lacey Sternum. Or back then she was Lacey, I can't think of her last name at the time.
Okay, so
Flyleaf
it's
Girl.
It's a different song.
They may be another album. You're right. They may be in other songs. I know. There's a song I'm thinking of.
No. Don't they in church music? Don't they cover one of the Barlow Girls songs?
No.
Okay.
No, that you're thinking Flyleaf.
Okay.
It's a Flyleaf song they cover. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's Flyleaf.
Okay. Well, anyway, but that is a fun fact.
So, a couple other credits I'll mention here. Sarah McIntosh and Robbie Say did the backup vocals on this album. So, once again, Robbie Say returning from last week. And I do know he eventually toured with David Crowder Band, so they must have been pretty good friends or something.
Right.
And then Sarah McIntosh she's now a solo artist. She's had actually a couple albums as a solo artist. Back in the day, it wouldn't have been too long after this album was produced, she was in a band with her two siblings called Chasing Furies, and they only ever released one album.
Okay.
And then she later, you know, went as a solo artist and stuff. Actually, no, this would have been after Chasing Furies. I take that back. This would have been after Chasing Furies, because she wasn't Sarah McIntosh in that album. But we'll maybe talk about that album another time as a one-off, because they only ever released one album. So is that all you have to say about the album itself, like as a whole package, productions?
Well, I was looking here through trying to find some information on the master, the guy who did the mastering for it.
Okay.
Like
the mixing and the mastering?
Yes, mixing and mastering of this record, which so far I have not found it very much, but also I'm not sure I've ever...
The master wasn't Chris Lord Alge, was it?
No, it's Steve Martin. Not Steve Martin. Steve Short.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which I've like I said, never heard of course, I wouldn't be the one that has.
The only reason I said Chris Lord Alge, if you look at any albums, not just Christian music, all music, Chris Lord Alge has mixed so many albums. Like, just look him up sometime. I'll be surprised if he hasn't mixed at least one Crowder Band album.
Right.
Because he has mixed everything under the sun. That's just what he does. He's a very big mixer. All right, so moving on to the album songs themselves. We'll start with track one, I Need Words. And this kind of begins their, I don't know if you would call it maybe a tradition of having a short, almost interlude song.
Right.
Because on this album, they have I Need Words.
Right.
And then the next album, they have Sparks Fly, which is even shorter. And then I don't know if you count it as an interlude song, but the album after this, they have Everybody Wants to Get to Heaven as like a very short snippet.
Right.
Prior to the album. What are you still looking up?
I was trying to look up more on the tracks, the track listing, see what feedback we could get. But so far there is no feedback from anyone.
Well, this is one of their not as well known albums, as I said. So this song, I Need Words, any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I Need Words.
So no thought. It was written solely by David Crowder, and you can kind of tell. It's just his general acoustic,
right,
simple stuff. And then we have the first really big song on the album, and I think it was a single back in the day. The only reason I say that is because it was released on their Greatest Hits album, which we'll talk about that some other time. I have very strong feelings about that album.
Right.
But it was released on their Greatest Hits album. Is Our Love Is Loud. And I feel like this song was the precursor to all their other singles, honestly.
Right. Now, musically, yes, because they did throw, like, they sometimes would throw in different, like, beats. I'm not saying there's a different count. But it started off as one, like, you know, simple snare and hi-hat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very simple drum, but later on it adds something different, which that is all music, but this is very important because a lot of their music later on becomes this, I want to say experimental, but not so much experimental, as much as it's like, we're going to start this song off as, you know, oh, this we're going to make people think it's a pop song. A pop worship song, but it turns into this rock, or maybe not even necessarily rock, but like more of a I wouldn't know the genre. I'm not sure what genre I'm trying to think of here. But we're gonna say it goes from strictly a pop song to a pop rock.
Okay.
It's kind of a mix between pop and rock, which that is a lot of their music. That becomes kind of their sound.
They describe themselves as an alternative rock band, which I agree with. They meet a lot of the alternative criteria. Like I said, Jimmy Eat World
very edgy pop rock.
Yes. And Our Love Is Loud, it sounds a lot like later songs like Holy Yours, This Is Our King,
right.
Everything Glorious.
Everything Glorious.
It really fits that mold of upbeat, I would say deceivingly simplistic pop songs that they would release as their singles, which this one was fairly simple. It was honestly a fairly straightforward worship song. Nothing too special about it, in my opinion. And once again, written solely by David Crowder. You can tell the ones written solely by David Crowder, and I don't want to... He is by all means an amazing artist. He has definitely earned his place in, you know, the superstardom of worship. But on the same hand, you can definitely tell these songs the other band members have their hands in, because they tend to be so much more creative,
right.
Whereas his songs are just very straightforward three chords.
Which is kind of, I would I'm not going to take any credit away from him, as you said, because of that. But because, you know, as a songwriter, it's a whole lot easier. Like, my songs, if not for you, you know, when we get together and we write our songs, my song would be very, very simple. Nothing, not that there's anything wrong with simple songs, but... We all know that the more creative your song is, the more catchy, the more people are interested.
Most of the time. There are examples out there.
We're just going to generalize right now. There are some people out there that...
There are some songs out there that are way too simple. But
right, way too simple, and people love them. Like,
just don't even get into specifics, just moving forward.
Specifics, because Chris Tomlin's still a good artist. Anyway... But as a songwriter, it is a whole lot easier to have more than one person writing lyrics. Because I can think of a line that I think sounds great, but if you can think of a line that you think sounds greater and I also think sounds greater or better, then that just makes the song even more.
I mean, really, it just goes back to something. I was listening to reading an interview by Peter Furler, and he said... collaboration makes every song better. That's why he always likes collaborating with Steve Taylor.
Yes.
Because collaboration will always make a song better, just like a lot of the great hits of the past are collaborations. You have John Lennon and Paul McCartney as a great example of what collaboration can do.
Right.
So I will say David Crowder's songs get much better when he's collaborating with someone. So
Jack Parker, Mike Dodson, even the B-Wack, even he wrote some lyrics.
But yeah.
Actually, he's been his hand. As far as I've seen so far, his hand has been in all of their songs from this album on. As he comes in all the way to the end of their career, he is one of the names. Because there's several that some of their names aren't listed in it because they didn't help write it. But Jeremy Bush, a.k.a. the B-Wack, and David Crowder, a.k.a. Crowder, are the only two that are always in there.
Not on this particular album,
okay,
but in future albums.
In future albums.
Well, we'll get into that later. I will say, I'm just kind of glancing through the songs here. Only co-writer thus far I've seen has been Mike Dodson. So he helped co-write God of Creation, which isn't a bad song. And then we get into the first cover of the album, All Creatures of Our God and King.
Yes.
And
which that song is public domain.
It is public domain.
But it is a cover. Right.
So I don't know who originally wrote it, even when it was originally written, because it's public domain. The feeling I get from it is that it had to be like a 1700 song. It has that feel that you can tell this was probably originally an a cappella song sung in a big cathedral.
It's Catholic based. This is one of the songs that Catholic choirs sing. And as we know, Catholic choirs are usually a cappella.
Yes.
We're not Catholic.
No, not by any means. And I have my gripes with Catholicism by many.
With modern Catholicism, now this is off subject, but original Catholicism was not as liberal as modern Catholicism.
But a lot of it's still messed up.
A lot of it is very, very messed up and very twisted.
Especially back when you go to like 3rd century,
right.
but let's not go into dissecting.
All creatures.
What I was going to say is I like a lot of older songs that would have been sung like a Catholic choir because they tend to have creation imagery in them,
right?
Nature imagery, and I'm a big fan of that. I think it's something that is even done in the Psalms, in the Bible. Creation imagery is something that's used, and when well done, adds to a song greatly.
And as it is my part, I would like to point out, if I'm going to give this song credit, I want to point out that the music does have a very good capture on the sounds. This is called All Creatures, and I feel like when I listen to the music, if I was listening to the music without the words, I would think of creation, because it's got a lot of celestial sounds, you know, a lot of just different sounds that remind me of nature. Not only do the lyrics remind us of creation, but I feel like the music coaxes and works with the lyrics.
And this
That's always a very good attribute in music. Your lyrics need, or your music should always collaborate very well with your lyrics.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what makes a great song, in my opinion, is when the lyrics and the song match together and make a beautiful whole.
And even though this may have been originally an a cappella, we're going to give them credit because they did take something that was one way and experiment. And as we were speaking earlier today, driving over here, that you were saying that if not for experimental music, we wouldn't have new genre. Like, you know, if somebody didn't take blues songs and say, hey, what if we add distortion and some delay to this, we wouldn't have classic rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I love.
Exactly.
So thank you, blues. Or whoever. When you tamper with the recipe, it's like, you know, somebody took chocolate chips and added it to the cookies when they were tampering with blues and created classic rock. I just want to say that. But anyway, I'm very hungry right now.
So, All Creatures of Our God and King, it's definitely their most experimental track. And it wasn't even the track I was planning on talking about the most, but
right.
It was worth talking about. It stands out, if nothing else.
It does stand out.
And that's something that's severely lacking on this album, is stuff that stands out to you.
Right.
And speaking of songs that stand out, that actually leads me right into the next track, God of Wrath. And this song, I don't know if... you got this view or not, this thought on it. And
now, before you say anything, do you want me to tell you what my thought was to see if it
is? Sure, I will see.
Now, in this song, God of Wrath, it's...
Which I just love the title. The title itself is pretty cool.
Because wrath isn't necessarily a great thing. But, you know, when we think of wrath, we think of trials, we think of things that aren't necessarily fun to go through, mm-hmm. aren't necessarily fun to have to deal with. But when we realize that he's not only the God of love, but the God of war,
mm-hmm.
he's God of wrath, but he's also the God of peace. But when we make him our God, the God of the wrath we're going through, he can then become the God of peace.
That's a really cool way to look about it. And I was not even going in that direction at all.
And
but that is really cool. I like that. I like that a lot.
And also in this song, it's a lot of like...
Contrasting,
compare and contrast. God
it
is...
says...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it says like... It's funny because the song's called God of Wrath, but then the lines of God of Love, God Above, God of Peace, God of Me, God of Right, God of Light, God of the Weak, God of Me, and then not really too much else. So I like your thoughts on it. The title itself is provocative, which is cool, and that's something they get down very well later. And that's why I feel like this album has a lot of the seeds for future great albums.
Right.
It just takes some time.
Right.
So, with that said, honestly, my first thought when I heard this forever ago. I can't tell you the first time I heard it.
Right.
My first thought was that Toby Mac, The Slam. The intro reminds me of it so much. And I was so disappointed when I got to the chorus and I didn't hear, like, Toby Mac shouting. Because that's why I'm expecting, because the verse builds up and builds up, and you're like, yeah, this is like intense.
Kind of the song goes it goes from that into like an acoustic, like a praise chorus, like a worship chorus.
And this the song says it was written by David Crowder solely. I don't know if maybe one of the other members just didn't get accredited for this, or maybe he solely did have his hand in it. But I get the feeling in this song, like he had this really epic verse. He's like, this song, this verse is really cool. And then he had this chorus. I was like, well, it's another worship chorus. And they're like, well, we might as well put them together.
Right.
And I'm just hoping for so much. And the chorus just kind of lets me down.
Right.
But at least it stands out.
The intro, when I first, well, not when I first heard this song, but later on, as I started becoming more interested in music, you know, my favorite band is Switchfoot. If we're gonna, now they're not strictly Christian, they're very popular even in secular music, but they have a lot of Christian base. They came from a Christian.
Yeah.
They were signed to a Christian record very first. Which actually, what was the first record label they were signed?
Rethink Records by Charlie Peacock. But that's neither here nor there.
Which, you know, as we said earlier, you know, the
Brent Milligan.
This album actually worked for them. But anyway, when I started listening to them, Aftermath, they're,
okay, I gotcha. Which came out way later.
Reminds me of this, except, you know, they don't have the...
I gotcha.
It's just the straight...
I hope everyone's envisioning the chords he's trying to emulate here.
Yes, I'm being very vocal about it, and I'm sorry.
It's all right. No, it's
but that's just how I am.
It's all good.
You have to deal with it.
Well...
Well, you don't have to deal with it.
You
don't have to listen to this if you don't want to, but...
I hope...
That's just the way I am. I'm sorry.
I hope people listen to this.
We do. We do hope people listen to this. We hope people listen
I hope, to this. I hope we don't think... Everyone doesn't think Solomon's annoying. I hope no one thinks we hate Catholics themselves. We love people.
And we hope nobody thinks that we're biased specifically to the way Donald Trump runs this country. You know, previous to last... podcast. I'm sorry about the statement I made, if it offended any of you. I love every president we've had.
Okay, neither here nor there. Let's not get back into that.
I just want that to be clarified, that we are not biased. We're very Christian, and, you know, I'm more conservative. You're a little more liberal. We'll just, you know, everybody has a difference.
We'll leave it at that.
Why we'll take this back to David Crowder, because they did make music different. They made worship music very different.
Well, they eventually. This album, not so much. So, like I was saying, the three songs that stand out to me most on this album are Our Love is Loud, just simply because it sounds like the template of so many of their future releases. And then All Creatures of Our God and King, just for being an experimental retake on a public domain song. And at that, I appreciate that it's a hymn that you wouldn't hear too much. It's right. Not Amazing Grace for the 150th time.
Right.
I really appreciate that. And then God of Wrath, just simply for an epic intro where the chorus lets down. But if nothing else, the title's provocative.
Right. And you know, I don't remember the quote entirely, but I've heard a quote before that, you know, if something doesn't provoke you... No. That's what I heard it from. Neil Sean of Journey. He said, I like to be different in the way I play guitar, because if I don't provoke somebody, if I don't make them either angry or if I don't make them happy, then I'm not moving them. Uh-huh. And music should always move somebody, whether it makes them angry or makes them happy.
Very nice.
Quote unquote, no shot. Don't stop leading us.
Did any other song stick out to you?
The only thing really I can say is the way, you know, when we were speaking earlier of what Crowder was saying the themes of the song was, it's a cover, but Obsession is probably the only thing that I can really see. Because it says, what can I do with my obsession? And then ends up, you know, talking about putting God as your obsession. I don't recall the lyrics at the moment, but that's the general.
That's actually the next song I had pulled open. Written by Martin Smith of Delirious fame, which I don't know if I may have said it earlier. Delirious does not get enough credit for being such a cool experimental band. But this song kind of harkens back to the nature imagery, of which I'm a big fan. And it says, my obsession with the things I cannot see. Is there madness in my being? Is it wind that moves the trees? Sometimes you're further than the moon. Sometimes you're closer than my skin. And you surround me like winter's fog. You've come and burned me with a kiss. And my heart burns for you. And my heart burns for you.
Right.
I think that's actually really good lyrics. And it's a shame they didn't write it, because... I'm like, darn, that's a good verse.
Right.
Like, those are some really good lyrics. I like that a lot.
They are very good lyrics. And as you said, thank you,
Martin Smith.
Martin Smith of
Delirious.
Delirious. Because those words, though. That's all I can say. Hashtag those words.
And then we technically have two hidden tracks. There's a couple other songs on there. My Hope, Thank You for Hearing Me. They don't particularly stand out to me, quite honestly.
Thank You for Hearing Me, I feel like it's kind of maybe the reason why they put that in there is there's that out that,
the Can You Hear Us, Thank You for Hearing.
Can You Hear Us, and then later on it says, Our Love Is Loud.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're like, can you hear us? Because, you know, we're making our love loud, and then later on they're like, thank you for hearing us. Because even though we don't, you know, more on the spiritual side, they're a Christian. They're a very Christian band.
Yeah.
And very spiritual.
Spiritually minded
in their lyrics. So later, maybe they're saying, you know, thank you for hearing us. We're going to thank you now because we don't know if you do. We don't know if you don't. You're God. So it's in your hands.
Let's see. If we try to read all their... You just gave me an idea. Let's just try and read all their titles together as a sentence. I need words, our love is loud, you're everything, God of creation, wonderful king, all creatures of our God and king, God of wrath, obsession, my hope, thank you for hearing me.
Almost.
Almost.
And creatures of our God and king.
I know, it was like so good up until then. Oh, well.
Right?
It was worth a try.
Yeah. We should do that with all the albums.
And see if like their titles make a sentence. Okay, so the two hidden tracks, Undignified... a Matt Redman song, which is, I'm not gonna lie, catchy as all heck. It's for a modern worship song, it's pretty catchy. I enjoy it. Just, I remember hearing it as a kid at youth camp or something, and it sticks out to me as just a really catchy song. That's a lot of fun.
Yes.
And then, as I said last week, we have the third part of You Alone as a hidden track on here, which they released the other two parts in links in their other albums. And that's the track listing. So, any other thoughts on the individual songs, Zolly?
Really, not so much. I feel like, you know, as a start, it's an okay listing.
Our final thoughts and rating. So I honestly have been toppling this over in my head how I would rate this album, because one part of me doesn't want to rate it too high because it's so inferior to their later work.
Right.
So part of me wants to rate it as its own piece of work.
Right.
And another part of me is like, I should compare it to everything else they did.
So compared to last album, let's rate it from the last album.
Okay, that's fair enough.
So last album, it's an average between both of us.
A four and a half.
We give it 9 points.
Potentially 9 points.
You know, that's the potential. You know, 3 points for consistency, 3 points for
lyrics,
3 points
for music.
And you gave it a 5, I gave it a 4, so it averages a 4.5. This one, musically, I'm gonna have to give it, out of the 3 stars, I'm going to give it a 2, because, you know, the musician, this, we have to realize this is their first album together.
Mm-hmm.
And they mixed very well.
Mm-hmm.
With it being their first album, all of them being young. You know, 18 to 22, that's how old they are. I won't give it a 2 for the music. Now, lyrically, we can't give them a lot of responsibility for the lyrics because several of them are, you know, old hymns, and or one of them is an old hymn, and a few of them are
covers,
and a few of them are previous. So I'm gonna have to give it a 1 for lyrics, just because of those facts. Not saying the lyrics aren't good. We're just going to say they're not new.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't fresh. And then consistency.
Or how it holds up against everything.
How it holds up against everything that they've done up to this point.
And, you know, Christian music at the time.
At the time. I'm going to give...
Music at the time.
Right,
how about
I'm going to give them a 3 on that.
Really?
Because it's very consistent with the time. Like you said, it was made very modern. And then also, each of their songs have that kind of... That different, that like, it starts out one way, but ends a completely different twist than you thought it was going to.
So, what's that give your final score?
That gives my final score a 6 out of 9.
Wow. So, I'll go backwards on this.
All right.
How it holds up against everything they've done previously in the music of the time. I don't like music that dates itself as a specific time. Now, right. Let me rephrase it. I like music that sounds like 80s because I like 80s music.
Right. Absolutely.
I like, 60s music that sounds like 60s. But if music should have a slightly timeless quality to it.
Right.
And this, I feel like, dates itself too much.
Right.
So music-wise, I'm... or how it holds up as a whole entire piece, I'm only giving it a 1.
Okay.
I feel like compared to what they did previously, it just doesn't hold up quite as well.
Right.
And it blends in too much to Sonic Flood, Hillsong United, Matt Redman.
Right.
If you was just to throw in some of the random tracks off of this and just mix it into a worship mix with all those other artists, they wouldn't stand out that much.
Right.
Lyric-wise, I'm going to go ahead and I'm once again only going to give it a 1.
Mm-hmm.
Their strongest moments... it's kind of sad. Their strongest moments are, lyric-wise, are a hymn and a song written by Martin Smith.
All right.
And not to say any of the other lyrics are amazing, but a lot of them are pulled from past albums and such,
right,
which diminishes them a bit.
Right.
And then music-wise, I'm going to split it even with the last album, 1.5. Now, I say that these are 1.5 for 2 very different reasons. So the reason for this is the other one was more of an indie flair, alt-rock piece. This is more of a pop alt-rock piece. And the reason why I give it the 1.5 is mainly because of the points. Well, mainly because of the experiment. There is some experimenting in there. God of Wrath, All Creatures. I appreciate that experimentation. So that brings my final score to a very low 3.5, which, you know,
I feel like
if we had to round it up or down like we're doing, I would round it down to 3.
Why?
Because like
is this album in a whole not better than their first one?
I would say it's about. I would say it's at least their first one would stand out in a crowd of other albums.
That's what I'm.
This one,
I don't know.
I don't think this one stands out as much.
I feel like is because it was kind of, I feel like, more disorganized. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like they had very much thought into this. It's a self-produced, well...
No, they actually had a really good producer.
It was a producer, but it was a lot of just David Crowder doing some, like, worship for a church. That's the kind of thing. It was disorganized. As a church, I don't feel like church should be an organized thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like church should be, strictly by, a spiritual move of God.
And that's why I said last week, I wish they would do the sound they did on their first album
right.
in a recorded setting, which they got really close to that in Illuminate, which we'll talk about a couple weeks from now.
Right.
So I'm going to stand firm on my three. So we'll agree to disagree on this.
All right.
I think now...
So we gave it a whole half a star less than the first one.
So what does that even out to? A 4.5?
No. Because I give it a 6 and you give it a 3. So six, the difference between 6 and 3 is a 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Last one we gave 5.
So half a star less.
Yeah.
So, That's just...
Yeah, okay. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Yay, man.
It messes me up.
So that's our final thoughts on this. I feel like the better things were to come. And so that is, hopefully, you've been able to hear us on
Brothers
Can You Hear Us?
Right.
We'll just give a stupid pun at the end of everyone, apparently.
This is Solly.
Hey, and this is Samuel.
And this is your weekly podcast with Brothers King Media.
Rock on.
Talk to you next week.